Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He's kind of a big deal, just not quite big enough to get his name in the title of the show. This is The Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair. Drop that low. On Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, I want to thank Kenneth Smith, or as he's known on Twitter, AccuKenX. He wrote in and said, in the 80s, Coke closed a bottling plant here in Newfoundland. Seems us Newfoundlanders.
Seems us Newfoundlanders
are adept at holding grudges. So there you go.
That's
and
good.
And also, someone else sent in the same thing. My crisis spending, his name is Jeff, said, tell Brent it's because Coke pulled out their bottling plant, but Pepsi is still here. So there you go.
Well.
There you go. That's why it's hard to get Coke in Newfoundland.
That's a good virtuous reason, then.
It is.
Supporting their own.
It is. Absolutely. It's a good virtuous reason. And Drew Goes to Camp said, I have seen RC Cola being sold in rural Quebec recently. Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, somebody's got to explain to me why Newfoundlanders eat cans of Vienna sausages.
They're good.
But that's like, if you go out in the woods in Newfoundland, like not people don't chuck garbage in the woods quite as much as they used to, but you will find,
like, they're good.
It's like archaeology. You find Vienna sausages.
Have you ever eaten them?
I have, yeah. They're pretty, but the local way to do it would also be to drink the brine in there.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
Because I spent a summer working at a meat processing plant.
Well, no.
You don't want to drink the brine. Sausages themselves, I mean, I'm an expert in sausage.
You like those little canned Vienna sausages?
Oh, I love them. Okay, I kind of know what's in them. It's snouts.
You'll fit right in when you come out.
It's snouts and hooves. And you know what they say about those mass-produced sausages, right? They're the only meat a vegetarian can eat because there's basically, you know, that's just the way it is. But you have Vienna sausages there. Oh, with little toothpicks and Vienna sausages on top of a little Ritz cracker with some Velveeta.
I think it's mostly.
Good living.
It's more straight out of the can is what I'm seeing. But anyway.
That's good eating. You should try that sometime. Just Ritz cracker, Velveeta, not real cheese. That's just stupid. Velveeta and then a Vienna sausage on top. You're good to go. And you will be good to go.
It's like a Morden. See, those are the canapes in Morden? Is that the...
Well, I mean, that's at the swankier establishments. Those are the canapes in Morden. Except we don't call them canapes in Morden. We'd call them little things you have before you eat the big meal.
Wieners on a cracker. Yeah.
On a cracker. Anyhow, do we have Jerry Howarth? Well, Travis is chatting to Jerry. Oh, they're going to find out. Travis is going to find out what Jerry did in his off day. And Travis is telling him that he went to the hockey game with Ken Reed. And Jerry's saying, how did that go? And Travis is saying, well, we had a lot of fun. We sat beside Shai Davidi and his kid. And Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry for the malfunction of my phone downstairs.
No problem. Congratulations, by the way, on being named the winner of the George Gross Award for Broadcast Excellence. And, of course, you and Tom were named, received the award together in 2003. So congratulations. It's been a pretty good year for you.
Well, thank you. It's been overwhelming, to be honest. And the only thing left now is to call some playoff games, and I'm really looking forward to that. But I knew George Gross. He lived right here in Etobicoke where I did. I saw him all the time. You know, passing through the off season too, and couldn't be happier for me to be able to honor him that way too with that award.
All right. You say that you like to be able to call playoff baseball this year. My sense is you're going to be able to call playoff baseball. We're going to get at least a wild card game out of this team, I would think, aren't we?
I wouldn't go that far. I think tonight is the biggest game of the year, and then there are nine more after that, plus a possible playoff game. And all of a sudden, who's the hottest team right now in the American League, in addition to the Red Sox? The Detroit Tigers. So I think right now, Jeff, there's a lot at stake here regarding the Blue Jays and well-pitched games by starters, timely hits, hitting with runners in scoring position, hitting home runs. There are a lot of things right now that the Blue Jays have to do well to get there. And I think I saw here just this morning, six teams are separated by three games in the playoff race in the American League, and I think the top three teams for the second wild card team are separated by a game and a half, with the Blue Jays ahead of that trio by one game. So, no, there's nothing guaranteed right now. They have to go out and earn it.
Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just going to say, and you know, don't sleep on the Houston Astros, who have got six games left against the Angels.
Although they lost one yesterday.
Sorry. So now they've got. Yeah, now they've got no. They still have six games left against those two.
But they, it's Jerry, and there are a lot of those. Like the schedule, there's a lot of variables here. Schedule strength is one of them. Whether teams are in or out of it by the time you play them is another one. But if you look at those last 10 for the Blue Jays, if they go 6-4, is that going to be good enough? And you know, and that's not a tall order, but it's a tall order for this team in terms of September because they haven't done that.
Well, I think, Steven, 6-4 would be a very good thing for that to happen as far as getting there. 5-5, I'm not quite sure. But the biggest three games probably would be against Baltimore, where you almost have to win 2 out of 3, and you're at home to do that. And that would help to really kind of solve the Orioles problem. But as I said, the Detroit Tigers yesterday, they win a doubleheader, and they give up 9 hits in a doubleheader against Minnesota. So there's a team that's only one game behind the Blue Jays, and then the Orioles are right behind that duo right there. So, but I do think the schedule favors the Blue Jays from the standpoint they're at home. They hit a lot of home runs here. The crowds will be electric again. And then you go to Boston, where the Red Sox are just running away with it here. And I saw David Price, I believe yesterday, won his 8th game in a row. And so the Red Sox are the Blue Jays from a year ago. And even that Blue Jays team fell 2 games shy of going to the World Series. But the nice thing is we're having this conversation, and the Blue Jays are the first wild card team. And if they can land that first wild card spot and then guarantee themselves a home game, no matter who they play against, anything can happen because the wild cards over the years have really done well.
We may end up having a pretty interesting discussion, Jerry, about that last series in Boston if the Red Sox are indeed home and cooled out. You know, because there are competitive responsibilities, obviously, if you're playing a team that's in a race still for a playoff spot, but they're going to be trying to set themselves up for the postseason. And, you know, we remember the Blue Jays after they clinched last year. You know, it's a different, you know, you're going to be a different baseball team after you clinch to some degree. So that, I'm not quite sure what the Jays will be walking into in Fenway, but we're pretty sure that those games are going to be meaningful from a Toronto point of view.
Well, they certainly will. I think even from the Red Sox standpoint, too, over the years, teams that have had guaranteed opportunities to go to the playoffs, and even the Tigers twice having to wait for a week to go to the World Series, that slows your momentum down. And I remember one year when the Giants won it all here just recently, they played basically every day. Were they exhausted? Well, not necessarily, because the adrenaline's flowing, and it took them all the way to the final game and winning the World Series. So, but I think the one thing that could help the Blue Jays is that if they have already guaranteed themselves the first wild card spot, and I don't see any of the 6 divisions now changing, I think they're pretty much all given as far as who's ahead, and that would include the Red Sox, then at that particular point, John Gibbons then could take his best possible starter, maybe Aaron Sanchez, pull him from that 3-game series if you've already got the first wild card spot pretty much locked up the way you want it. But to guarantee home field advantage, if there's a playoff game against the Tigers, let's say, or Baltimore, then you have Aaron Sanchez ready to go and ideally at home for that first wild card game.
Jerry, you know, we've seen this team. I think we kind of have an idea now. I mean, we're on September 23rd. I hope to God we've got an idea now. But I think we know what this year's Blue Jays team is about. They've had difficulty hitting with runners in scoring position. They've got good starting pitching, very good starting pitching at times. What concerns me about the past month is not so much the fact that we've seen games where they haven't hit with runners in scoring position. I'm concerned about the defense, and not just the errors, but the phrase that you use all the time, plays not made. And Jerry, in the last, well, I'm going to say the last 2 years, I can't remember this team going through this type of spell defensively where, you know, it's not just Devin Travis, Josh Donaldson. I mean, there's some guys out there that are kicking the ball around.
Yeah, there are, and I would agree with you 100%. And when you look at Devin Travis, it's his second year and a full year now, and his bat is very good. You wouldn't trade that. That's why he's in there. But defensively now, It just kind of like it's piling on here, one play after another. And even for Josh the other day, 12th inning there in Seattle, that infield ground ball, he's there, he throws to first base, throws it wildly. And then for the second time here in the month of September, he's dropped a perfect throw at third. The umpires dropped the hammer down, out, and then had to change it because of an error. And both times the official score didn't rule an error on Josh, which really they should have as far as official scoring goes. So, yes, that has been an issue. I think the one thing that really has to now stand forward here for the Blue Jays is their ability to hit home runs and to do it with great just to do it here over the next seven games at home, because those home runs, if they can do it right up across the board, will cover up some of those other mistakes that they're making, too, that right now are being exposed because of the lack of hitting with runners in scoring position and not the home run ball. Look at Bautista, that home run there. That was a great opportunity to sweep that series in Seattle. Then they had all kinds of opportunities over the next two innings, but not hitting with runners in scoring position hurt them. So I think the whole key here, Jeff and Steven, will be how many home runs do they hit, and if they can hit plenty, then that's going to really help them going into Boston, because then maybe everything's already lined up for them.
Jerry, how far, you know, again, we obviously, the whether they get to the postseason or not is to be decided first, but if it's true that Jose Bautista and I think Josh Donaldson are not going to be 100% healthy but for the rest of this year, that they're going to be playing to some degree diminished by injuries or wear and tear or whatever it is, how much does that limit what this team, the potential for this team in terms of getting through a division series or getting through an ALCS?
I think everything being relative, it's not that much of a factor, because the other teams, too, have their injuries, and they have their players who have played 5.5 months, and they're injured as well. We just don't read about them. We don't hear about them, but they have issues as well. Even Russ Martins, you can put him in the mix there, too. But I think the nice thing about the players we just mentioned, been there, done that. And so with the experience that they've had, you play through those situations. And I think Josh is the best at that. Now, that's what you're hoping here, is that with the off day yesterday, they can pick it up, play hurt, and get it done, because that's what everybody's trying to do. And I think every team is in that situation, not just the Blue Jays.
In conversation with Jerry Howarth on the Jeff Blair Show. That series in Seattle and the way that series finished, you know, with Ari Dickey coming in out of the bullpen and Josh making those mistakes, any concern in your part that there might be carryover?
No, not at all. I really don't think so. Because, again, with Donaldson, first one on the plane, and he's already talking and enjoying the company on his team. He doesn't get locked up into, oh, woe is me, or what we didn't do. It's all glass half full. So, no, I don't see that as an issue at all. I think it gets down to the fact, too, that Ari Dickey stays in the bullpen for situations just like that. He could have easily won that game, too, pitched two or three or four innings for the Blue Jays. But, no, there's no carryover there. Tonight's the night. You're looking for a well-pitched game by Liriano, and he has. Francisco Liriano has been outstanding in his, I believe, half a dozen starts. And while he has one win, he could easily have three or four with the no decisions, where, again, the lack of offense has had him leave games down 2-0, 2-1, 3-1, 3-2. Again, it's going to get back to the offense. And bottom line, can they hit? Can they hit with power here and get it done? Because that's been the Achilles heel for this team right now throughout the course of the season. And here they are at home. They couldn't ask for a better environment. And they just had that environment in Seattle. You talk about a carryover. This will mark now 10 straight home games, because those crowds in Seattle, exactly what the Blue Jays needed after floundering there the last two games there in Anaheim.
Jerry, you see Josh Donaldson in a way a lot of us don't. We're not in the charter. We're not in the team bus. What's he been like during this span of games, which I think we can say is probably the toughest go he's had with the Blue Jays? What's Josh been like through this?
He's been pretty much the same as he's always been. Probably, though, a little less vociferous, teasing people, getting out there and just enjoying what last year was August and September, where everybody enjoyed it, and he was a frontline player there, too. And now this year, I'd say he hasn't given in at all to this situation. He's a little more quiet, but when you get him behind the scenes right there with his teammates or whatever, he still has a little, he has fun poking fun with his teammates. He can still laugh a little bit. But, again, it gets pretty serious right now, too, with everything that's involved. Last year, the Blue Jays were in pretty good situation, so it wasn't quite nearly as intense. But there's the bottom line there with Josh, too, Jeff, and everybody else. This is an intense situation, but the Blue Jays have shown me that they're not getting tense. Now, it's getting real as far as the defense we talked about and everything else, but this is not a team that gets tense that's going to hurt them. And I think Donaldson will be the first one with Tulowitzki to tell Devin Travis and Josh Sainz, too, hey, it's me. I've done this before. Been there, done that. You play your game. Let's go out. And that's the value of, really, I believe the Blue Jays now are the oldest average team in Major League Baseball with all the changes that the Yankees made there at the August 1st deadline. That's going to help in this situation because there's no substitute for experience.
Did you see, beyond Donaldson, Jerry, did you see any, during this very, you know, trying month of September, this is a very confident group, right? They, you know, at times they've been kind of almost a swaggery group. They're so confident. They kind of, that started last year and it carried through spring training this year. And, you know, they're, as you get to the end of August, they're in first place and probably looking ahead and feeling pretty good about themselves. And then you hit a bunch of speed bumps. Was there a change of tone? You know, in terms of kind of emotionally around this group, I know they're a veteran team, and I know there's a lot of guys who've been there before. But you know, coming off those two losses in California, for instance, after winning the first two, that there had to be a bit of a dip, you know, for this team, didn't there?
Well, there was a little bit of a flat atmosphere getting on the plane going to Seattle because they played so flat in those last two games there, and basically did very little to help their own cause. But having said that, this team too goes to Seattle. And right away, they've put that behind them. That's the ability of this team, and you have to do that in baseball. A younger team like this, I think that'd be more of an issue. But this team gets off the plane in Seattle, and to a man, Marco Estrada, too, he said, we walked out on the field, came off the field during batting practice, and we got a thunderous standing ovation from about 25,000 people in the stands already, all wearing blue. So that was a big boost for them, too. Did they need it? Not necessarily. But they felt it, too, and that was a great pick-me-up to win those first two games. No, and I think they'll feel the same thing here, too. They'll be sold-out games for the next seven games, and that's the best environment that the Blue Jays have had here the last 2 years since 1992 and 93, and that will help them considerably. But, no, they haven't given in to it. There are moments where, sure, you get on a plane, you're flying to Seattle, it's pretty quiet. And it was pretty quiet coming back from Seattle, too, after the 12-inning loss. But the value of this team here is the experience. They move on quickly, and the next day is a brand-new white canvas. Let's paint it and see where we go.
Jerry, good of you to join us as always. Again, congratulations on the George Gross Award, and we will see you down at the ballpark tonight.
Well, thanks. It's going to be a lot of fun, and for all those fans, too. So Seattle revisited, but here in Toronto.
Take care. It's Jerry Howarth, the voice of the Blue Jays. I got a lot of grief on Twitter because I called Safeco Field. And Wilner even piled on, which was kind of disappointing. You know, Toenail's still here, by the way. Okay. Wilner kind of piled on, too, which was a little disappointing, you know, because I called it Rogers Center South. Dummy. Actually, the Rogers Center's farther south than Seattle. Well, yeah, it's 4 degrees latitude farther south. I mean, the point I was trying to make.
I understand the point you're trying to make, Jeff.
Yeah.
That's crystal clear.
A lot of people need to get a life.
Well, yes. Or you could just tune this stuff out.
Or I could just go off Twitter.
You could just go off Twitter. Not drive yourself crazy.
I really should consider. I say that every week. I say that every week. But I think people here like us to be on Twitter. I'm surprised you can get away without doing it.
No one is. They cannot. I think it's in my contract.
Oh, look who's here.
Speaking. There's the guy who could do it right there. Yeah.
I think we should almost have a. I mean, I'll run an account for you and Barker because Barker people want Barker on Twitter as well.
Could we share one?
Can I run it?
Because we think alike, so we could just share one, right?
Can I run it? if I could run it, I would love to have a Barker Brunt Twitter account. Oh my God! What do you mean I'm not allowed to block people? Oh, here's the big man's here. The boss is here. See,
he's excited by this idea clearly as well.
Yes, he is. Or he may just be coming in to bug Travis and myself.
What do you want?
Oh, what?
Well, why are you baiting me?
No, I'm not. I'm saying we should go. Brunt should go on Twitter, don't you think?
You should be on Twitter. You should be a man of the millennium.
There you go.
I was man of the last millennium.
You need to be.
That was a good. It was a good millennium for me.
Where everyone can hate you equally as they hate everybody else.
Well, there you go. See.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Those inspiring. See,
I'm just trying to. I'm trying to look after your career. You know.
Yeah, that's that. When you start back, you know, you start kind of backdating it. It's you know, it doesn't feel quite the same way.
No. But anyhow.
Anyway, you never know. Maybe I'll just do the next one.
The next what?
Whatever the next thing is, right? There'll be a next thing, won't there?
Well, there's already a next thing. Well, it's like Instagram.
Well, I know that. And then there are all kinds of other next things. But maybe there'll be one where I don't have to even hit a key. You know, I can just channel my thoughts.
Oh, that. See, now that would be deadly.
Yeah.
That would be awful.
Yeah, like the little thought balloon.
That would be horrible.
Yeah, well, it'd be entertaining.
Yeah, it'd be horrible. I'd probably be arrested if that was the case.
Anyways, did you share Jerry's take that a veteran team, like that, you know, there's a fine line between being a veteran team and an old team.
Right.
You know, and this is an old team. It's kind of a creaky team right now. And, you know, the freshness of youth, you saw that with the Yankees when they got that infusion. Now they got, you know, infusion of
the new
Babe Ruth, too.
You've seen it with the Red Sox all year.
You have. So would you rather have a bunch of guys who've been there but maybe are worn down a little bit at the end of 150-odd games, or would you rather have a bunch of kids who are going, oh, my God, isn't this something?
I have always believed that experience wins in the postseason in baseball. But the way the game is now, I would much rather have a young athletic team with some fresh legs. You know, you've got to have some veterans. Put it this way. If you could give me Troy Tulowitzki, Russ Martin, and surround them with kind of youngish Mookie Betts-ish, I mean, they're obviously not going to be all Mookie Betts. But if you could surround them with young go-go guys, I'd love to have that.
Yeah.
You need a couple of steady veterans, and I really do believe... I believe you need a veteran behind the plate, and I believe you need somebody to sort of, I'm going to borrow one of Barker's phrases here, you need somebody to captain the infield, whether he's a veteran third baseman or a veteran first baseman. I prefer my shortstop to kind of be the guy.
And Tulo is definitely that.
And Tulo is that. You give me those two guys and let me kind of fill in elsewhere. Yeah. I think the way the game has gone now, youth plays a lot more than it ever has.
Because I'm going to say, like, again, this is, if they don't reach the postseason this year, one of the things we will be talking about is the age of the team.
Yes.
Right? Like if this team falters enough in September that they do not reach the postseason after leading the American League East at the end of August, we're going to be saying, man, they were beat up and they were old.
Well, and here's the other aspect of this. If at the end of the year that happens and we find out that Josh Donaldson needs hip surgery and you know, then I'm okay. That'd be pretty serious injuries. Nothing you can do about that. My concern would be if, and this sounds kind of cruel, but my concern would be if things go awry and at the end of the year, everybody's healthy. Because now I'm thinking, well, they just weren't good enough.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, they did wear down. But as I always say, with Donaldson, I always leave an asterisk. I always just assume that he's probably hurt. And I have to say the same thing with Pilar. I assume that they're both hurt beyond what they want to let on, the team wants to let on, or, you know, we can conceive. Because that's kind of the way they are.
And look, and Jerry's right. The end of the season, everybody's roster's not optimal, right? You're beat up. And I did see Donaldson leg out that double in Seattle, and he looked awfully good. You know, for a guy with a bad hip, he's certainly... could dig going around first base and run fast. But I do think it's going to be because they have faltered down the stretch here. And again, they've got time to get it back together and they get themselves into the postseason and you come in as a wild card. There's all kinds of the good things can still happen. But you know, if you think of kind of when they hit that speed bump, it was right around September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the possible explanations if that's the case.
Yeah. But again, there is a place for experience. I wonder if you were able to talk to Mark Shapiro right now, just even off the record, what would he say about that? Like, is the team too old?
He's certainly aware of the age of the team because he's talked about that.
He's
right?
talked about that openly. It's one of the first things. I mean, he's mentioned anytime you get into one of those conversations with him.
And they weren't really set up to get younger this year, even if they wanted to, because the farm system doesn't have the assets for them to get younger at the major league level right now. Probably won't next year either. But there's, you know, youth plays in baseball, right?
Yep.
It does, especially now.
Yeah, and you know, the Red Sox are showing that, the Yankees are showing that. In a lot of ways, I think the Houston Astros are maybe showing that more than anybody else because they were
Absolutely.
Dead and buried, and look out, here they come in the rearview mirror. And it's because they've got a bunch of young guys. Their pitching's falling apart, but they've got some young guys who, you know, they've got more in the tank right now than some of the teams they're chasing. And it has become a young person's game. Travis, do we know about Anthony yet? All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little NFL. Hopefully, Anthony Gargano, who is host of the morning show on 95.7 in Philly, the Fanatical, join us. I want to talk about Carson Wentz, because anytime you can talk about somebody from North Dakota, it's a good thing.
He's going to get spanked by the Steelers this weekend.
He's a good quarterback.
He's coming, yeah, he's going to come back to earth, though.
But he, you know what? He may be, after doing some reading on him and after seeing some interviews with him, he did, I don't like John Gruden at all, but John Gruden's sort of quarterback, I don't know if you saw that last weekend, but where he kind of has that quarterback, the one-on-one thing with Wentz was fantastic. I think this might be one of those guys who's tailor-made for Philly, because I think he completely can handle all the pressures the Philly fans are going to throw on him, and all the stuff that comes with being a quarterback of the Eagles. I just think he's one of those almost zen-like guys.
It'd be a good quality to have in Philadelphia.
It would be. We'll talk the NFL when the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah, it's a podcast, but we're still not going to let him swear. Subscribe to Tim and Sid at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right. Well, we got stiffed by a guest.
That's never happened before.
No. And, you know, I don't know why he'd do that, you know, considering the fact he just got off the air 10 minutes ago off his own show. Anyhow, well, Anthony Gargano will join us. We'll get him on next week to talk about Carson Wentz. Product of North Dakota State University, by the way. Kevin Barker's alongside Stephen Brunt and myself. It's my almost sort of alma mater, North Dakota State University.
What's that mean? Because you drove to North Dakota because the bars are open later. Is that as close as you got to North Dakota State? What?
North Dakota.
You went to Minot?
No, I actually applied for the university to the University of North Dakota.
Very high standard. It's hard to get in there.
I thought you went to Manitoba.
I did, but I mean, North Dakota State is the other
Harvard
university.
The Harvard of the Northern Prairies,
that's right. So, I mean, you know, if University of North Dakota, it's almost like North Dakota State is kind of, I'm kind of an alumni, almost alumni, because it's actually the arch-rival.
Did you close your eyes and just, that's where you landed with your finger?
No. Bemidji State was another place that I applied for.
Bemidji, Minnesota.
Yeah, home of Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox.
I know that. I've seen that.
Yeah.
What's the North Dakotan's mascot?
Well, they had to change it. The University of North Dakota was the Fighting Sioux, and they had to change it.
Like, what is that? What is it?
Indian tribe.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's verboten.
Know what the Sioux were?
Yeah, obviously okay. So, but... You got to be politically correct all the time.
Well, they're a Native American tribe, and so I think now they're called the Thunder. They had to change the name of the team. No, University of North Dakota is the Thunder, the Fighting Hawks. North Dakota State are the Bisons. Wow. Travis, know your University of North Dakota teams. It's either Hawks.
What's their fight song?
I don't know their fight song.
Sing it.
I don't know their.
Why
fight
shouldn't
song.
You?
Because I didn't go there. Didn't go there.
Yeah, I've called on this station because I don't know my fight song.
Yeah, but you went to the school for 4 years, allegedly. 2 years. Allegedly.
3 years.
3 years. Allegedly, you didn't know the story, Brent, right? When we brought him in, the first time we had him on, we thought we'd play the Virginia Tech fight song.
And he was puzzled by that.
Well, he'd never heard it.
Yeah.
No clue what it was.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure how. Depends how kind of rah-rah you are, you know?
I love
football. Yes, I know he went to
football.
Carson Wentz went to North Dakota State, so they're the Bison. But I'm talking about the University of North Dakota. Different school, Travis.
So you made the segment about you.
I made it about me, yes. The first talk show host on this station to make a segment about them. Never happens.
You're the first. Congratulations. So
you've opened the door to this, Travis.
Yeah.
You're
fired up on Friday.
Probably should have Travis on air right now.
Because I'm mad because he got stiffed by a guest. That's Friday.
Oh, well, Broncos are going to win the Super
off.
Bowl. It's that easy.
What?
The Broncos are going to win the Super Bowl. Other than that.
Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick. Do we need to start talking after what we saw last night? I mean, any three of us could have quarterbacked that game.
Sure, he's the best coach in football, right?
Where does he rank? It's kind of hard to say where does he rank all time, Brunt, but he has to be like really, really, really in a very elite group, doesn't he?
Well, you know, because it's not just the coaching, right? He's the organization in a lot of ways. And he's got a great offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniel, right now, who works really well with him. And he's got a really good defensive coordinator. But, you know, those guys have come and gone, right, in that organization. Coaches have come and gone. Players have come and gone, except for Brady. It's a cap system, which I think, you know, if you can kind of maintain a dynasty and a cap system in any sport, you're awfully, awfully good. And this is, you know, they don't win the Super Bowl every year, but they've been in contention for the Super Bowl every year during the Tom Brady era. It's, you know, and again, you look at the guys they let go and then the guys they bring in, they're down to their third string quarterback right now. And in a short week, so the other guy gets hurt on a Sunday, they're playing on a Thursday. They design an offense for a guy who is completely different than Jimmy Garoppolo and completely different from Tom Brady, and they managed to smoke a team that was undefeated 27-0.
Yeah.
Okay, the stupid football guy that I am, why hasn't anybody else in football as a coach figured out ways to do it like he does it?
I don't know. That's, you know, lots of great coaches, but they tend to have a shelf life, right?
Yeah, because obviously you said it, third-string quarterback, he goes out and wins with that anyway, makes it look easy. He basically eliminated Watt defensive side. How does he do it better than everybody else?
I just think every year he's always been able to find value in players that other people just don't have an interest in. And the other thing they did in that game, you know, and that, which I found kind of interesting, is they basically played three quarters. They added a sixth offensive lineman, essentially what they did, for three quarters. And they completely neutralized the pass rush. And, you know, essentially what they're saying is no pass rush. We'll give our guy a chance to not make mistakes. It's just, I think the other thing Belichick does maybe more than anybody else is I just think he really has an understanding of what the other team's doing defensively. The number of games where you watch his team find a flaw and just, and he does it to the Bills all the time. He'll find a flaw in that first drive and they will pick at it and pick at it and pick at it and pick at it all afternoon long.
Yeah. Like that, look, my only criticism of him would be that, you know, with the exception of Randy Moss, they haven't given Tom Brady a big time wide receiver to work with. Those guys have had, you know, other guys like Edelman, and they've had, you know, kind of interesting running backs who could do different things. And you've obviously got great tight ends, right? And Gronkowski, who's kind of serves that purpose as their number one guy when he's healthy. But aside from the brief Randy Moss here, you know, if Tom Brady had that guy, if he'd had like, you know, again, there's a lot of guys are now past their prime, but, you know, a Fitzgerald or an Anquan Boldin or a, you know, Megatron, one of those kind of wide receivers on this team to work with as well as those other pieces, I think they might have won another Super Bowl or two. And, of course, they lost one with the guy catching the ball against his helmet, you know, that, which was the Randy Moss team. But that's it, you know. I think sometimes that idea that all parts are interchangeable, you know, I'd love to see him have one of those guys for Brady to work with, but... But other than that, you know, he doesn't fall in love with, he's only fallen in love with one player. And that's a guy who was a sixth round draft pick out of, you know.
Yeah, again, I don't know a whole lot about football besides I watch the Broncos a lot. The Patriots, to me, when Tom Brady's not in the game, they run a lot with their quarterbacks.
Well, not so much.
Quarterback sneak kind of thing. They eliminate a guy like Watt. Up the field kind of guy wants to rush the passer all the time. What do? You run the quarterback.
Well, I think they ran last night was designed specifically for the guy who was playing quarterback.
Yeah.
And so he's a little bit more mobile. He can run. They didn't really force him to throw the ball downfield, give him a lot of little kind of checkdowns and slants. They did take Watt out of the game. But, you know, when Garoppolo, you know, there who until he got hurt last week was looking unbelievably good, he's more mobile than Brady. So they let him, you know, he moved around in the pocket a lot more, ran a little bit more, but he was throwing the ball downfield as well. And then when Brady comes back, they'll get a guy who's completely immobile, although they let him sneak it.
Sure.
Right? Like, it's weird. They go into short yardage and Tom Brady still takes the ball. So it's... Their ability to adapt to what they have and to deploy personnel and to find depth. And you're right, Jeff, to find value in guys. Everybody's, you know, Vince Wilfork's playing for the other team last night, right? You always see ex-Patriots are all over the place. Guys who were stars or guys who were significant parts of Super Bowl teams. Chandler Jones, you know, guys like that. You know, they don't pay them.
I got to be honest. It's just hard for me to believe that Belichick's that much better than everybody else. It really is. On the outside looking in, you would think – today's football game, that he's that much better than every other coach.
Well,
it's hard to believe,
every
right?
other general manager, too.
Yeah,
because
it's
you know
just
what?
Hard to
it's the two things. Like, I know he's had general managers, but, you know, if you look at the personnel, I you know.
And that's not supposed to work in football.
Well, it's, you know, and again, he's had guys who've collaborated with him very well, who've worked very well, you know, out of the front office. But the way that team is configured is Belichick. You know, he's a defensive genius. That's really where that's his side of the ball. But I think the greatest strength of the guy is personnel.
Yeah, it's a quarterback league too.
Yeah,
and you don't have your one of the best quarterbacks ever in football, and you're still 3-0.
Well, and think about where this team is going to be. They've got the Bills; they're going to be 4-0, and getting Tom Brady back.
Yep.
I mean, and I don't know if it was Tony Maserati. It was somebody who was on from Boston on this station talked about how they thought, I don't know, maybe it was Lou Maloney in the morning show, how they thought that 2-2 would be.
Yeah, sure.
That'd 3-1 would be optimal. 2-2 without Tom Brady, you'll take that. It could be 4-0.
Well, plus they're going to have won their – the AL East is a dog's breakfast again. Yeah. So you almost concede the division to them already.
Yeah.
So they're not going to have to sweat that. Look, they're going to have a tough time. Injuries can change a lot of things still. They're going to have a tough time with Pittsburgh down the road, and they're going to have a tough time with the Denver defense down the road.
Yeah, and one thing that I've noticed, again, football is, you know, you watch it from afar and you notice Belichick is a very special teams coach. A lot of the mistakes happen with the other team when he's coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Happens on special teams. Last night they got that fumble, on the 15-yard line or whatever. That's easy scores. He thinks a lot. It's like, you know, you take advantage of the new rule now with when you a kickoff is the 25-yard line. So why do that? Kick it with inside the 20, the 10.
Make the guy handle the ball.
100% do that. So, you know, a lot of that is around special teams, which I think a lot of coaches don't do that, right?
Well, I think attention to detail. You know, attention to the small. Like, every NFL team's got a million coaches, right? And my God, it's the most coached league on earth.
Sure.
So you would think everybody's seeing the same stuff and doing the same stuff. But, you know, they clearly do something different in Foxborough.
Yeah, if I don't have my quarterback and I pin the other team inside the 10 or on the 10, and my defense is good and my special teams are good, I'm going to win a lot of games.
Well, and the other thing, you know, look how it's been interesting with Brady. You know, look how they developed guys behind him. They're not, you know, they didn't go out and – Garoppolo is a well-regarded guy, but he was not one of the top three or four quarterbacks in that draft. The kid who played last night, where did they pick him?
Osweiler.
Not Osweiler. Played for the Patriots. They picked he's a third-round guy, kind of an insurance guy. They don't even have a fourth quarterback on their roster, right? Edelman was the backup. So, you know, he's had guys like, you know, now Brady's been pretty durable, but, you know, the kind of the Matt Castles of the world, guys who have stepped in. But, you know, not flashy. Like, they haven't gone out and drafted the franchise quarterback of the future. They haven't got, like, an Aaron Rodgers sitting behind Brett Favre the way they had, you know. They haven't got that guy sitting behind. It's some guy you go, yeah, I think he's kind of good, but he's not one of those guys everybody talked about. And yet, when Garoppolo steps in as a starter this year, my God, you know, he hits the ground running. So that's brilliant personnel. It's brilliant preparation. And he's, like, Belichick's a weird guy.
Yeah.
And an unpleasant
guy. He's intimidating.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's a lot of stuff that suggests that he's not the best human being in the world.
Right.
Well, he's a football coach.
Well, yeah, there are variations,
on that scale. So you're saying he's the only football coach because he's the only one that's making that work?
No, but I'm just saying that you sort of, as a football coach, you sort of assume that there's a flaw there.
I guess. Nice off people. The rocker, you got to be a little bit, right?
Nice people.
So many different personalities, it's my way or the highway kind of thing.
Well, you got to be obsessive, right? And they, you know, that's, we talk about Gruden.
24 hours a day.
Gruden isn't, you know, is famous for sleeping in his office 2 hours a night or whatever.
Dick Vermeil used to be
never leaving the building.
See, I'm a Gruden fan, but I like to listen to him talk. You guys don't, I do.
No, I said I thought the segment he did with Carson Wentz was fascinating because he... You know, when I like it when he sits down and does the one-on-one with the quarterbacks. If you get a quarterback who's engaged in it and who isn't just sitting there and kind of nodding, but is kind of, there's some give and take. And the one thing I've noticed with John Gruden when he does that show is generally he does draw stuff out from the guys. You know, like I just figure Carson Wentz is going to be there and going to be basically saying, well, yeah, you're right, and I just got to give 110%. But no, he's drawing out from him. What do you see when you drop back? What is you know, I found it, I like that aspect of it. I just find him unlikable when he's broadened, when he becomes more of a general analyst.
Yeah.
I find him unlikable.
I think he used to pump guys up, you know, on Monday Night Football, that whoever was playing quarterback would become the greatest quarterback in history.
I think you
got to
do that though in football,
right? Even in a dog game.
If you're a football fan, you like to hear rah-rah a little.
Yeah, right?
You guys talked about this, and I just want to move on a bit, because one of the games this weekend is the Pittsburgh Steelers against Philadelphia and Carson Wentz, and I think you both think there's going to be some comeuppance here.
Well, Carson Wentz has beaten, who is it, the Browns, and who else did they beat? They beat two crappy teams, right?
Two crappy teams, and he took a mauling in all those games. I don't know if he...
The Bears, and the Bears are awful.
I don't know how many hits he took in that game, and that would scare me playing Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh's really, really good.
Self-exposed.
You have a good defense. Like the Broncos, you have, when you're a quarterback against the Broncos, you have
the
twitches.
They got a great offense, too. They're the most balanced team I've seen this year.
Who?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
They have looked good.
Yeah, they look like a Super Bowl team. So I would think Carson Wentz is going to have a little bit of a come back to earth thing. But it's look, I understand the optimism in Philly. You know, they're finally, you know, Chip Kelly essentially ruined that franchise, so they're starting to kind of rebuild from the ashes. And you know, this guy, they gave up a lot to get him.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, he looks like the real deal.
Do my
so
Broncos
far.
Have a chance? Winning the Super Bowl again?
So that defense?
Yeah.
Can you win they did, an entire season with just defense?
They did last year.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
They won the Super Bowl, the worst quarterback in the league. You know, he's a famous guy, but he was terrible at the end.
Yeah, I would never underestimate the Broncos. As long as that, you know, as long as Von Miller is around, I'm not going to underestimate.
He could do that.
Yeah.
Can the Broncos do that?
Well,
that's the question. Can you turn around and hand the ball off? With a young quarterback, can you do that and think punt first before trying to throw a ball into coverage?
Probably depends. Depends who your running back is. You know, like that. That's you know, you can do that. There have been some mediocre quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls, but you know, Trent Dilfer, you know, always gets singled out. But there's a guy, right? Won a Super Bowl, but he was playing for a team that had a great defense and could run the ball. You know,
he thinks punt first, right?
You can do that.
That's what Peyton Manning did in the playoffs. You think punt first.
Yeah.
When in doubt, punt. Right.
Well, you'd limit.
Can you do that with youth?
You limit your exposure, right? And
yeah.
But I know. I think that Denver defense is good enough to. Well, again, I think those three teams are going to. We're going to be talking New England, Pittsburgh, and Denver on the
Pittsburgh's
AFC
intimidating.
Side.
Yeah. They really are. That's what football's all about, right?
Yeah. No, I think those are the three teams. Then those are going to be the three teams setting the pace on that side of the ledger. NFC, I don't know.
New England scares me. They do. It's hard to think Broncos beating New England. It's all about home field advantage, I think. It really will.
Well, it doesn't hurt.
You'll think that, right? Yeah.
We're going to let Mr. Brunt scoot.
Yeah, I got to go fix my phone.
He's got to go fix his phone. He's having phone
trouble. I'm in phone hell right now.
And Twitter. Get on Twitter, right?
Well, that won't help.
There are.
I can't look at Twitter. I've got a phone.
There are several people who have volunteered to run the joint Brunt Barker Twitter account.
Ooh.
I think that'd be the greatest Twitter account ever.
Don't
you think?
Yeah. Because you don't want me running it.
Laura Creamer on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I concur on the Barker Brunt Twitter account, and yes, Cracker Barrel is great.
Nice.
Uh-oh. Hang on a second. We'll have that.
There you go.
Can we have a fight within our own Twitter account?
Yeah. Yeah. Hate Gruden and hate Cracker Barrel.
Hate Gruden and hate Cracker Barrel.
That was fun. I got through my first football segment.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, it was
well.
Excellent.
We're gonna
nice.
Have to
you
have
sound
you.
Like a football
you know
guy, right?
I just like football.
Why don't you come in and co-host for a whole 3 hours next week when Brunt's gone?
You want to do that?
No.
Do a whole 3 hours.
I'm on the road next week.
Ooh.
Just think about it.
And Carson Wentz is from North Dakota State, home of the Bisons. University of North Dakota's team name is the Fighting Hawks.
He's from there. He's from there.
Yes.
He didn't choose to go there. There's a difference.
My phone.
All right. We're going to take a break. Brunt's phone guy is here. Baseball Central's next on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.